America's big money oligarchs are now buying up the nation's farmland. They are also investing big money in fake food technologies. Guessing at what their intentions might be leads us to ask, can we escape the tyranny of oligarch food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1283rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Tepique who are tuned into the podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, just because you are paranoid does not mean they are not out to get you to eat their food. Such has been my thought lately as I followed the machinations of America's big money oligarchs. Now, I hold no animosity toward these supremely successful business people, nor do I even envy all the wealth they have accumulated. Though, in fact, I would not mind having enough money to blast off into outer space whenever I want in my very own self-funded rocket ship. Well, that ain't going to be happening, so what the heck. What concerns me is what the oligarchs intend to do with all the money they have accumulated. I fear they are going to use all that money to force me to eat their food. Case in point, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has invested $6 billion into bringing genetically engineered crops and petrochemical fertilizers and pesticides to those poor farmers of Africa who are trying to grow crops to sustain their family. And instead, the foundation wants them to grow crops, commodity crops, for the international marketplace, kind of pulling the rug of self-sufficiency out from underneath their feet. Though we see, and now we see, the Gates Foundation buying up 242,000 acres of farmland throughout the United States. Will the foundation be using all that farmland to develop a regenerative and sustainable agriculture for the United States? We don't think so. The Gates Foundation, along with Amazon's Jeff Bezos, I guess Bezos is the proper way of saying it, and other members of the good standing of the oligarch community are now investing in fake foods, by which we mean highly processed foods made of patented substances that are made to look and taste like real food. One example is their Nature's Find, a Chicago-based company that manufactures meatless meat and dairyless dairy out of fungus. I fear the oligarchs will try to force me to eat their fake food by chasing real food off the market. They will do so by claiming real food causes climate change, racism, sexism, and the coronavirus. They will back their assertions with the best science money can buy and pound the assertions into the consciousness of the general public with all their legacy and new media might. Soon, real food will become immoral and illegal and only available on the black market. Yes, I am paranoid, but just because I'm paranoid does not mean they are not out to get me to eat their food. And so I ask, can we escape the tyranny of oligarch food? Who better to ask than Teresa Caraggio, who is the author of How to Dismantle an Empire. And she's also the host of what?
Third Paradigm Radio.
And the website, Third Paradigm.
ThirdParadigm.org.
Good. Well, let's start there, Teresa. What is the Third Paradigm?
So what I have looked at in that, my radio show is about 10 years old, but it's all archived there, and I'm now going to be starting a YouTube podcast. Mm-hmm. So what I look at as the third paradigm is that we have all of these artificial dichotomies that have been created to pit us against each other. And I look at some of those as being liberal versus conservative. vegan versus divide animal husbandry. Conquer. It's all about divide and conquer. And so what I say is you look at a completely different continuum in which we're on the same page. So one that's very important to me is producer versus consumer. If we look at ourselves as part of the producers, then it's an entirely different conclusion that we're going to come to, that we're all on the same page.
Well, it's really interesting because as I was shopping at my farmer's market, there are many farmer's markets around my town, as there are probably your town, but as I was shopping my way around the market and talking to the farmers and looking at all the people buying food from people, I did get to thinking about how I have come to fear oligarchs and the intentions of oligarchs with respect to our food and our sovereignty. And as I was pondering this, there's Teresa. And she steps in front of me and she said, I knew there was a reason to bring my book to the market today. And she pulls this book out of her bag and it says, How to Dismantle an Empire. And I thought, well, here's a radio show for sure. So let's fire off. Now, that was serendipity because you usually don't go to that market, wasn't it?
No. I'm now on the west side and I'm dancing on Saturday morning. So usually
so
I'm not
there.
So
here it was,
there.
Just
yes.
Something
meant
brand
to
new.
Be.
Yeah, serendipity. So away we go. How to Dismantle an Empire. What empire? Which empire is that? Where do we start here?
Well, I think your use of the term oligarch is very, again, serendipitous, because what I'm looking at is the empire of debt, the empire that debt built. Now, there are four different forms of debt that preceded the invention of money. One is slavery, where your time to take care of yourself is entirely borrowed from the master. Another is patriarchy.
Wait a minute. That's a very interesting notion. The time that you have to take care of yourself mm-hmm. is time that you're taking from the slave master, which
yes.
is the person who owns you.
Yes, yes. And that's a very important concept that you're latching on to, is this idea that owning our own time is owning our bodies. It's owning our person. That's the only things, the only two things that really we're entitled to in this world is our own time and access to land. But let's continue okay. with the different forms of debt. There's also patriarchy, where for a woman, mm-hmm. she was owned by her father, her brother, or her husband.
A slave.
And then we have land monopoly, the idea that someone owns the land.
Serfs,
and also that form of feudalism and just having a debt that you owe to the owner of the land. They say in sociology that if you take 100 men on an island, or women, and you give one person ownership of all the people, or give one person ownership of the land, the effect is exactly the same. So land monopoly is the other form.
So serfs on the land.
Mm-hmm.
Slaves
right?
on the land.
Yes.
Whether you own the farm or not.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the fourth form is conquest, where you can have an entire country of people and their right to live in the place that they've lived for generations is now borrowed from whoever thinks that they won that right.
And of course, this is just ancient history. This has nothing to do with today, does it?
So when we go back to, say, the sacred cow of our governmental system, democracy, what we're going back to is a system of slavery, is a system in which all four of those existed. And they were revolting. They had all gotten together and decided that they were not going to take this anymore.
All the slaves.
the slaves and the serfs and the women and the colonized.
We're fed up and we're not going to take it.
Yeah. And we're not going to take it because the serfs who owed a sixth of their land, of their expected produce to the Lord.
A sixth?
A sixth, yes.
Wow.
If they didn't pay that, they then became slaves. They had to sell their wife, their children into slavery and then themselves. And so they weren't going to take it. And so they revolted. And so this guy named Solon, who was wealthy but not born to the archons. The archons were the rulers.
They're like the oligarchs of the time.
Exact oligarchy comes from archons. Hierarchy comes from the inheritance order of the archons. It's who gets to be the ruler next. And so all of these words really come from that place in time. And so,
which is the beginning of our country.
Which is, yes. And so what Solon did was very clever. First, he developed land monopoly within families. He invented primogeniture, which meant that only the oldest son could inherit all of the land. So that made everyone else dependent and needing to find something else. And then he created a little stepladder so that if you had wealth, you could become part of the assembly. You could become an archon too. But what you needed were thousands of bushels of barley corn so that you could arm your other sons militarily and be able to go out and create that conquest. So you had to use other people's labor. So what that did was it co-opted the small landowners, and it made them side with the archons and say, we can be consumers too. We can have all the labor of the colonized and the slaves and the women, and we can be protected ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that put down the rebellion because he had taken out the critical element of those who were citizens of the empire who were consumers. But it did a second thing. It created this Greek mercenary soldier that was so successful that it became its own commodity class.
Now, when I mistakenly said this was from the beginning of our country, but it goes way back.
Yes. No, we're talking 3,500 years ago.
Oh, way back.
This is
okay.
In anthropology. Okay. And a lot of this is from the anthropologist David Graeber, mm-hmm. who wrote Debt the First 5,000 Years.
Wow.
And so these Greek mercenary soldiers, everybody wanted them. Every lord around there who wanted to expand his territory wanted them.
So the empire of debt,
yes.
which is the same as the empire of slaves.
Absolutely.
And how are we going to go about dismantling the empire? Well, first of all, why do we want to dismantle this empire of slavery? I think there's probably a lot of people who do not mind being slaves. It's easy. Just do what you're told. Somebody takes care of you. So why should we dismantle that? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Teresa Caraggio and her new book, How to Dismantle an Empire. And we're talking about the empire of slavery that still exists today. This is the Food Chain, right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it's the Argons. Is that what you called them, Therese?
Archons.
Archons. Archons. Archons. Mm-hmm. Way back 3,500 years ago, developing the Empire of Slavery, which they called Empire of Debt. Same thing. And it still goes on today. Very much so today. Take us up to today, Therese.
Okay. Well, let me go back still just for a moment, those 3,500 years, to figure out what money is and what money isn't.
Okay.
We've been told that money is a unit of trade, but you can disprove that by looking at the label in your shirt. There is nothing that your labor will ever do for that person, for anyone from that country, most likely, for anyone in that entire class of producers.
So our shirts come from China. Nothing we do is going to go back to those people in China except money.
Right. And so what is money? If money is a symbol, what is it a symbol of? So going back 3,500 years, what those lords needed to do was figure out a way to get these soldiers so that they could conquer other places. But then they had to feed them. They had to shelter them. They had to equip them. And they had to give them something so they didn't run off with the spoils. So someone had a brilliant idea, which is to take their treasure, melt it down, make it into little coins, and stamp them with a value that was higher than the metal, and then tax the people who were already conquered. So then those people had to supply the soldiers themselves. They had to feed them. They had to give them shelter, equipment.
So the conquered had to feed the conquerors.
Right. Yes.
With their taxes.
Yes. So then they could go out and conquer more people. And that way, those people could then become the new caste of slaves. And so it was a self-perpetuating system that is still going on today.
Wow. And you can sure see it. Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Okay. So here we are in the great today. And how does this empire work today?
Right. And so when we look at what it did, it created this class of consumers, this class of people who were so much in debt for their taxes and for their homes, for their person, that they couldn't afford to produce. What they had to do was be part and collaborate in the conquest of their neighbors. So the first reason that I look at for why to dismantle goes back to the word dismantle. That to dismantle is to take off the mantle of authority, to take off that mantle of power. And so I think we need to question the authority of those who are issuing the debt, because it also takes away our moral authority to decide what are we doing to our neighbors. We can't be producers now because the cost of living and essentials are so high in our country and the cost of land in particular, that we can't afford to produce for ourselves. So it makes us dependent on those people who are producing, which takes away the greatest thing that we own, which is our time and our access to land in order to take responsibility for ourselves.
So all of the time now that we take, that we use to take care of ourselves, is actually money that, or time that we're stealing from the bank.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And when you look at so 94% of all money, which is accepted for debt or taxes, is created through mortgages. A mortgage is created by someone wiggling their phalanges over a keyboard.
You mean it's not real money?
It's not real money. It doesn't exist prior. It's not as if they're taking, it's not like It's a Wonderful Life. It's not like they take our savings and lend it out to someone else. We all know we don't have as much in savings as we have in debt. And so in order to create that, they do something called double entry bookkeeping and make the loan over here and the credit to pay it over there, so that then the books balance.
Who is they?
Right. Great question. The oligarchs of today, who are the bankers? And we're not talking about the 1%. We're not even talking actually about the people who are shooting themselves into space. We're talking about the one in a million, fewer than 100 people in the entire world who have taken over, who have the banking system. And what the banking system says is that the rich, the super, super, super rich, are the only ones who have the right to create credit and to create money. And that means that what they, you can't create credit against something you don't own. We've given them free ownership of our homes.
But doesn't the federal government have that right, and only the federal government have that right?
Yes.
What about the Federal Reserve?
Yes. The Federal Reserve, as some others in this field say, is no more federal than FedEx. The Federal Reserve can't even be audited. You know, you may remember some years back, Ron Paul tried to pass a bill just to audit the Federal Reserve, but they don't have that right. It's a cartel of bankers who then regulate themselves, and that the government is entirely dependent on it for this crazy loophole. And here's the crazy loophole. What the Constitution says is that only the federal government has the right to coin money. That has been interpreted by the courts as meaning coins. Just coins. That's the only thing. If you take a dollar bill and look at it, it doesn't say U.S. Treasury bill. It says Federal Reserve note. So anything that is printed, any credit that's issued, which is nearly everything, is coming from bankers with no relationship to the government and no reason to report back.
Anybody seen any silver dollars lately? No. So that takes us to the empire of debt and slavery today.
Right.
And so essentially, we are, what you're saying is that we are in debt to people who manufacture money out of thin air.
There's
nothing to back it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Yes. So let's look at...
So how do we become indebted or enslaved to people that are making money out of thin air? I mean, why don't we just say, never mind. Why are we indebted to them? What holds us?
Right. And so that is a combination of threats and bribes. And I actually don't use the term slaves for us, because there are other people who have completely had to give up their right to be consumers in order to produce for us. And so
that would be like the Uyghurs of China?
Right, yes.
They've given up everything to make our tennis shoes.
Yes.
And our shirts.
Yes.
So when we look at the label on our shirts, we have done nothing for them.
Right, yes. And it would be like the immigrant farmers in this country.
Yeah.
So we have people who are our producers, so that we can be and feel entitled to be, in some cases, pure consumers. So I think we need to question what I call empire privilege. There's a lot of people who talk about white privilege, but I think that empire privilege, which is the entitlement to consume without producing, is something that we all share. It's something that bonds us. And I think we need to question how it is that those people can be serving our lives when we're doing nothing in reciprocity for them.
So we've somehow stopped the cycle of life, right?
Right.
It's like growing crops in soil that we put nothing back into the soil.
It is a perfect analogy, yes. And we are in that place where we are not in a position of reciprocity, and we can't afford to be. There's a Netflix special called The Good Place where they do this Groundhog Day of heaven for someone who's lived a good life. And what they show in there's not even a way to be innocent, because you can't. Things are so complex, and have been made so dependent that there's no way that you as an individual or that we as a community can escape it without changing it for everyone.
We're slaves.
We are definitely, yes, owned. They own you, as George Carlin said.
Okay. So why change that? Like I said before the last break, it seems like a lot of people are just perfectly happy being slaves to debt, to this empire of debt.
Right.
So why change it?
Yes. Well, another reason, as you pointed out, is that this is now accelerating at a breakneck speed. Now, when we look at this concept of the Great Reset, what they're saying is you will own nothing and be happy. What they're really saying is we will own everything. And maybe we'll be happy, finally, but maybe not.
And who cares what you think?
And who cares what you think?
So
right.
Is my paranoia unjustified? Am I mistaken in thinking that they are going to find a way to force me to eat their fake food?
You are so not paranoid. Because I would say that for my section 3 and 4 of my book, the subtext could be, give up hope, all ye who enter here. That what I'm out to do is convince you finally and for all time that there's no way that you can get out of it. There is no way that this is going to turn around on its own. No little modest reforms are going to change it. We're on this trajectory, and this trajectory is shooting up like those rockets into space.
So
that's how wealth disparity is.
They weren't kidding when they call it the Great Reset.
Correct. Yes, it changes. It changes everything. Right now, for instance, in the first quarter of 2021, 15% of single-family homes were bought by financial institutions, not by individuals, not by real people.
So we throw a little virus into the world and people go bankrupt and all those houses come to the market and who can afford to buy them?
Yes.
Those who manufacture the money.
Right. Yes. And that happened, I write in my book about that happening after the crash of 2008. That the same institutions were snapping up properties in the sun and sand belts. And so there's no reason that they can't spend as much as they want. They're bidding 20 to 50% over the asking price.
Because they manufacture the money.
Because they manufacture the money. So essentially it is a debt to themselves. And so when they create this money out of nothing, they're only creating the principal. They're not creating the interest. So at 5.3%, the interest is equal to the principal. Where's the other half going to come from? That's how all the money is being made.
Slaves.
Well, no. Inflation. What is mistakenly called inflation, but should be called dilution. It's dilution of the actual value. So what I tell people is your house is not worth more. Your money is worth less. Because your money.
The principle of modern times. So.
Absolutely. Your money buys less house, which means it's going to buy less long-term care. It's going to buy less of everything that you need in your life because people
money
have to live.
Money is kind of like snow in spring.
Mm.
Just melting away.
Yes, yes. The value is getting leached out every time they bump up. And inflation has nothing to do with how many TVs you can buy. It's all about housing. When they drop the interest rate from, it was 20% when I bought my house almost 30 years ago. And every time they drop it, it increases the amount that you can buy, that you can, that a house can cost for the same amount of repayment. But it makes it where you are never going to be able to get out of that debt for...
Well, you're going to be enslaved for 30 years.
For 30 years, and now with a double income. So it's 60 years of labor that has been co-opted. And we're really the first generation where that has been true, when it's been seen as women really doing a disservice.
They're taking women out of the home, putting them into the factory, and now we have no babies being born.
True. Yes. Yes. And so yes, that now in order to raise a family on one income is nearly impossible, and even more impossible for our kids.
Okay, now I am convinced we simply must get rid of this empire.
I knew when I talked about kids that would get to you.
Of phony money. It's not even money. It's
monopoly money. It's monopoly money.
It's monopoly money that enslaves us for years.
Yes.
Folks, right back. Stay tuned. Oh, I have one more minute. Goodness sakes. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. I'm a very paranoid boy. I believe the oligarchs are conspiring to get me to eat their fake food. I'm an admitted paranoid. I might be wrong, and hopefully somebody will convince me that I'm wrong, but Teresa Caraggio is not doing it at all. She's not convincing me that I'm wrong. She's convincing me that I'm right, and that they're going to do this. They're going to make me eat fake food and enslave me in the process. So when we come back, we're going to talk about how to dismantle this empire of nothing. And it really is nothing. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Teresa Caraggio, author of How to Dismantle an Empire. Right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place while the USS Dale steamed through the Bering Sea, January 1943.
We took some terrible waves up there. One time a big groundswell rolled us over so far I thought we'd never make it back. I was on the lee deck when the ship went over into that roll. Luckily, I was able to grab onto a bulkhead handrail, and when the Dale went over, my feet left the deck. I hung there with nothing between my feet and the ocean but air. I was scared. She went over on her beam, paused for a minute. Then she shuddered and shook because one of her propellers was out of the water and thrashing air. Slowly, very slowly, she rolled back toward the vertical, and my feet found the deck again. That wave scared the devil out of me.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
It's all a delusion, or so it seems. Money made out of thin air, forcing us to spend 60 years of indebted slavery to pay it back, to pay back money that was never there in the first place. And so how does all of this money come to be accumulated by a few that own the empire? And how are we going to dismantle that so we can win our freedom and eat the kind of food we want to eat? Teresa?
Yes. And the other meaning, the common meaning of dismantle, is to take apart. To take apart and form what Wendell Berry, the great poet, philosopher, farmer, calls the commonwealth. So when I look at taking apart this concept of debt, I feel that we do owe a debt. We owe a debt because we're living in houses that another generation built. Another generation educated us. Another generation provided the infrastructure for all of the things that make our lives convenient and comfortable. We need to repay that debt by making sure that that generation can live out the rest of their lives with dignity and with and in comfort and security. And we need to pass those things on to the next generation in a better form. And so one of the great dangers, or the consequences of having this system where we are working for the oligarchs in order to make the rich richer.
And eat their food.
And eat their food. Which is awful, is that then we also are not doing what's really the purpose of our lives. In every species, the purpose is to pass things on better to the next generation, to raise the young, and to raise the young to be responsible, not to be the spoiled adolescent brats that essentially they want to make all of us. They want us all to be consumers who expect other people to be our servants and to do our work. We need to be raising this generation with the concept that manual labor is life. Life is work. And it's just, it's part of it. And it's how we take responsibility for ourselves and for each other.
Teresa, I often say that the biggest tragedy of the industrialization of agriculture is that it served to take people off the land and put them onto the streets in hooded sweatshirts. And so how is it possible to teach those kids on the street corners in hooded sweatshirts that responsibility and that debt and why they should even bother repaying the debt?
Right. And so I see there being two components of how we do this. And one is having a plan, and the other is having a vision. So having a plan is what I talk about in my book, that I talk about there being three tools where we can create a supplemental economy. This isn't making anyone who's happy with the way things are change what they're going to do. But if you have one of those kids in a hooded sweatshirt who says, I don't want this. I don't need to make a lot of money, but I want to live a decent, secure, hardworking life. You're going to provide an opportunity for them to do that. And here's how we can do it. The three tools is taking back taxation, taking back the debt, so that only the Commonwealth is the default owner of the property. It's not changing private property, but when property changes owners, who gets to create that credit? And then it's creating the digital currency that can repay that debt. So you're
I'm thinking the oligarchs that are not going to be liking this book on how to dismantle an empire.
I don't think they can read anymore, right? Yeah. I mean, aren't they all shooting off into space?
If they manufacture money, they don't need to think at all.
Yes, so, and there are less than 100 of them and over 7 billion of us. Yeah. And so why do we think that it's impossible to change? We don't need to change even the 1%. We don't. I honestly am not concerned about the rich. What I'm concerned about, what I say is kind of like the Godfather, leave the gun, take the cannoli, leave the money, take the assets. If we take back the assets that back the money, the assets being the properties and the land, then we take back our own lives. Mm-hmm. And so then
do we take back the land? Look at Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates, 242,000 acres. How do we take that back from the Gates Foundation?
Right.
This is the prime farmland they're buying.
Absolutely.
This is the kind of farmland. You know, the farmers of 40 centuries in China could support 20 people on a quarter acre.
Wow.
Of an honorable existence.
Yes, yes, yes.
And here we have 242,000 acres supporting two people.
Right.
So.
Okay. So here you are. You are the Commonwealth Bank for Santa Cruz County. Mm-hmm. You want to take back property that is being misused. It's extractive. It's taking away value from the county. You create the money. You can buy it back. And if they don't want to sell, you can then use eminent domain to put a price on it and take it back.
So how does the Commonwealth Bank work then? So you're talking about creating, or you're talking about firing the Federal Reserve. are you not? Is that what I'm hearing?
Actually, no. No, I'm not, because they can let their system go on. But I don't think we should continue to allow them to issue money out of nothing. The money that they have. So here's the money that they have just in a low estimate of what's in tax havens. In tax havens, the $11.5 billion there, that if you put it in $100 bills, it would stretch for 23 times to the moon and back.
Well, you're not talking about billions. You're talking about trillions.
Trillions. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. Trillions. Yes. So 23 times.
Or probably gazillions. Or who knows?
Yeah. What? So the money is out of control. Don't deal with it. What I call the system.
So just instead of facing them, and forcing them to do something they will never do.
Right.
Just set them aside and go your own way.
Set them aside and go our own way, yes. And that, once you issue money, you can issue dollars to go out there, but what it becomes, I call carrots. So the carrot is the last symbol on the keyboard that isn't being very, used very much, except for the nose on emoticons. And so we can have our own system, and then debt ends up becoming jobs, because that's money that you can then issue mm-hmm. for jobs that provide the services, or for people to be able to, say, buy local food. So you can issue that money that's only good, because it's a digital credit, for buying local food.
You know, Michael Schumann
yes.
talks about closing the loop. Containing the money.
Right.
How do we do that?
Yes. So I talk about Michael Schumann, who I admire in my book, but I think he's missing something, which is that when you create a local currency under the current system, you have to convert it to dollars so that it can be taxed. So that's going to take, you know, over 20% out, 20 to 30% out of your local economy right there. And then you have to pay for all of the debts. All of the debts for all of the homes can only be paid in dollars. And so that extracts to the banks another quarter of it. And so by the time $1, you know, $100 circulates, I follow how it gets whittled down to just a few cents within only four circuits. You have to control taxation and make and bring up something called protectionism, which has made been made into a dirty word, but the idea that you protect your economy so that local producers are favored over buying something halfway around the world where they have a different cost of living and different environmental and protections for workers.
We am a member of Think Local First, which is an organization here in Santa Cruz County that promotes localism. We demonstrated once what happens when you prevent money from leaking out.
Right.
And
right.
The way we did it was that we manufactured five checks from five local financial institutions, each check for $100. They were great big checks so that they wouldn't get lost.
Yes.
Know? And we gave them away at a mixer, five $100 checks. Each check had to be redeemed at a locally owned business. And the locally owned business that received that check had to redeem it at another locally owned business. So we followed these checks around as best we could for 30 days. Mm. And in 30 days, five $100 checks created $8,711.48 worth of local commerce. So the more you protect, the more that money can compound and the less control they have over our lives.
Absolutely. And that is exactly what we need to do as economic planners. So let's say we have 100,000 people, you know, in our commonwealth, and we're going to issue 200 carats equal to $200 every month for food, for locally grown and produced food.
Ah, instead of food stamps.
Instead of food Ooh. Stamps. And everyone has them. Everyone gets this. What that produces with every month is going to be $20 million or carats. That is go, but the next month, let's say even half of that stays local. The next month you have 30 million, and then the month after that you have 35 million, yep. And so it keeps compounds. On multiplying, and every time it produces more value. And that's what you need to track when you're planning the local economy, is how many times can you get that to circulate before it gets extracted out?
I call my plan the 2x2 pledge, which is, it's as simple as two numbers. One is two and the other is two. And I suggest that if each one of us takes the pledge to spend $2 per day on local food, and talk two other people into doing the same thing, we can essentially create a local economy of billions of dollars without having to spend an extra penny on anything, just
Absolutely.
By local food.
Yes. And what my plan does is make it so that you can't do anything else with that money. That money is a gift, but it's a gift that can only be used for that one thing. But there's actually three other things that in
well,
my...
Yes. Can I borrow some of your plan and tack it on to my 2x2 pledge? I like the idea of using money that otherwise goes to food and force it to be dedicated to a local economy.
Absolutely. I am trusting that you will use this plan, and that what it enables everyone who receives it to do is to then you can say, okay, if you're receiving money for a local good or services, there's no income tax on it. Now, you're still going to pay Social Security, because that's going to, we need to protect our...
You have something else to do with Social Security, I think.
That how I use Social Security. Mm-hmm. So what I use the Social Security Trust Fund for is to back our banks, so we can locally do our own banks.
Instead of backing nothing?
Instead of backing nothing.
Wow. Well, can this help us regain control of our own land and our own destiny? Or will we still be forced to eat the food of oligarchs? What do you think?
I think that my vision is that this is going to enable food sovereignty, and that within our lifetimes, we can take back our time and our food.
Well, I think it's a very good idea, because the prospect of eating the fake food of oligarchs drives me crazy. I want real food from real people, using the labor of their minds and their hands and their children and their community. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Teresa Caraggio, How to Dismantle an Empire. Let's get to work, folks. 2x2 Pledge, thirdparadigm.com.
.org.
.org. Away we go. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it, and live.